Now, without further ado, it's time to present our speaker for tonight, our old friend Bernie. Come on up, Bernie.
A little nervous. My name is Bernie. I'm an alcoholic. Yeah, I've been kind of pacing around, man. I got a lot of friends here, and 65 years, that's how old I am, 1961. That's born and raised in Chula Vista, California. I'm a homeboy at Chula Vista, and I used and I got loaded in Chula Vista, and I got clean and sober in Chula Vista. That's my story, and I'm going to try and carry a message of hope and of recovery, because that's what I have today, and if I offend you, I have some cards. Where were they? They're over there. They're a pre-amends cards, and I thought about that. So if you guys need a pre-amends card, I'll be passing them out later. And I'm not here to offend you. I'm here to try and carry the message of hope and recovery. And I am a little nervous. I don't know why I get nervous here. You know, it's because it's like this is a big time when you speak here. You know, I feel it's like I made it. I made it to the top of the heap of shit. I made it to the, you know, to the place where I have some hope. You know, I was a little nervous, and I seen Dwight. Me and Dwight go way back, and he goes, "Bernie, you got it, man. We're homeboys." And I go, "When I seen Dwight when he was out there." Man, if he can get it, I sure can get it. And he was one of those guys, man. And at the bottom is where we find hope, you know. And hopeless is where I found God. And my sponsor always reminds me, hopeless is where you find your creator. And I have these cards. I had them last time I spoke, and I'm going to use them again because I use a lot of meth, and I forget a lot of shit, you know. And I'm trying to keep it chronologically in order, you know, and not get too drifted off, you know, and I will try and stay in recovery because I have a lot of war stories, but so do you guys too. And my sponsor keeps on telling me, stay in recovery, Bernie, stay in recovery. And we know about the war stories, but then my sponsor, he says, tell some of those war stories. Some of the old timers want to hear it. And I used and drank like all of us, you know, I hit bottom many years ago, but I didn't get clean and sober when I hit bottom. You know, I stayed there for a while, and I bounced off the bottom for a while, and my bottom was walking down Palomar, I think, in Broadway. I was so ashamed of my life. You know, my head was down, and I reached in my pocket. I probably had a string tying my shorts together because, you know, I was losing. I was like 128 pounds soaking wet. I could hang glide on a tortilla chip, and and I put my belt, I had a string for my belt, you know, because I kept on getting sucked up more and more, you know, as I had a couple problems. I had a parole officer and I had a bad habit, and I reached in my pocket. I always tell this story, and I pulled out four pieces of lint and a penny. I remember, it was like yesterday. How did I get here? You know, I had a pretty good family, and, you know, I thought I had, you know, I had a pretty good job before that, and I lost that too, but, and then I was here at this spot, you know, and I was on parole, I had a bad habit, I was out of money, that penny wasn't going to get me shit, and, but that was symbolic to my bottom. It was more like in the big book, it said, I was in that quicksand, I was in that quicksand, and I couldn't get out of it, didn't know how to get out of it, I had no idea about recovery. I knew nothing about this program. I knew nothing about getting clean and sober, and so that was my bottom. You know, so I have these cards, and I start off with number one. That's my number one card. You know, and I would like to thank the pioneers because they're really I come here a lot, and my sponsor says why do you go to meetings, Bernie? You go to meetings to find newcomers to work with, and I have a few sponsees here that I've worked with, and they're doing really good, and. They don't always get it, but you know what? The guys I got are doing pretty good, you know, and I got some really good success, and I don't think it's anything to do with me. I think it's the creator working through me, and I take most of my sponsees to the Sweat Lodge, and I've done that for years, and there you'll either find God or you'll scream like a bitch, and or both. It's really hard, and it's really hard, but it's a place where I found my creator, and I have to surrender when it's becomes very difficult. And I surrender, and whenever I surrender my self-will to the Creator, I usually can get through the hard times. And I try to remember that wherever I go in my dominion, which means wherever I travel. And in my life, I always carry my Creator with me. And I learned that early in recovery with my sponsor, Emmett Fox, Sermon on the Mount. It talks about dominion, and that's wherever I go. And my Creator's with me now. And he stays with me. He's in my back. He burns within me. I tell my sponsor, my higher power is within me. We just stoke it out. We just kind of cover it when we use and we drink. We just we kind of smolder it out. And then when we get clean and sober, we kind of let it air out and we start getting some flame, you know. And then we just got to start. We got to start stoking it, you know. And doing that is going to meetings on a regular basis and having a connection with your higher power. And what that looks like is like, well, let me go to number one first. I'd like to thank my sponsor. He's here. Thank all my my sponsees that are here. This whole table are my friends, you know. God dang, you guys all came for me? That's crazy, man. That's crazy shit. Yeah, they wanted to make sure I came through. Oh, yeah, okay. I've been coming through. I've been showing up. And my sponsor is, you're one of those guys that shows up. You know, and I showed up, and now I just got to do the other stuff. And my sponsees, my friends, my sweat family, you know who you are. And then and pioneers, and congratulations to Liz and Carlos. God, I didn't even write that shit down. I got it. It was pretty good, huh? Because I don't remember shit. And or stuff. I'm sorry. I'll watch my language. And I don't want to offend. I'll start passing out those amends cards if I offend you. I don't want to offend you guys. I'm here to carry the message. Anyways, I grew up in Chula Vista. You guys knew that. I went to Chula Vista High. I went to Lauterbach Elementary School down there on Broadway. And no, 4th and Palomar. I was a pretty good little kid. You know, I didn't get into trouble till like junior high. I started getting into trouble, a little bit of trouble, and not a lot. My dad was really tough. I have a brother and two sisters. One of my sisters is bedridden. She's been bedridden for about 15 years. I see her, you know, I pray for her all the time. I pray for all the sick people that are out there and the addicts and alcoholics that are suffering. I pray for them too. And I truly believe that if I pray for you guys, I will get something in return. And that's my belief in this thing, in the spiritual path I'm on. My mom's still alive. My dad, he was worked for the county for 30-something years, and he was tough on me. He kicked me out when I was about 16. He put bars on the windows, and he told me to go and learn how to live. You know, I don't do that with my son. The pendulum's swinging the other way, and I've been kind of soft with him, and he's one of us. Anyways, I'll get to that later. I played baseball, football, like all the other kids. I was pretty good at baseball. Actually, I was really good at baseball. But I had one small problem. And when I was getting into the bigger leagues, I started smoking weed and I couldn't hit the baseball anymore. Go figure, you know. I used to hit the shit out of the baseball. As soon as I started smoking weed, I couldn't hit it no more. I was 15 years old. I was one of the best baseball players around. I couldn't hit the ball no more. I couldn't put it together that it was I was smoking weed and I couldn't hit the ball no more. It's one of the hardest things to do is hit a baseball. It's one of the hardest things to do, right? You smoke a little weed, you can't even see it, you know, anymore, you know. Used to hit the shit out of it, but anyways, actually over here at the Pony League, I was in the newspaper. I had two home runs in the championship. That was pretty good. I was pretty excited. I showed my dad, but he didn't give a shit. Anyways, because I was the bad kid. My son was the good. My brother was the good kid. So you know, he always got all the stuff and. Because he was a wrestler and he was Mr. You know, I was the middle kid, so I always got all the shit that rolled downhill for some reason. Some reason I always got in trouble. I always got whipped for what everyone else did. I got whipped for it. You know, I'm not crying a river, but I'll just let you know that. And it, you know, and it probably played a part in why I left that house, and because my dad used to beat me a little bit. Anyways, so I played baseball and then I played Pop Warner when I was a little kid. That's where I met Dwight. Pop Warner. We were Pop Warner kids. Chula Vista Spartans, yeah. Raiders. Yeah, I played. Yeah, I was pretty good then too. I was a pretty good football player back then too. I remember playing football, and then so I went to Chula High, and I got I was playing football and baseball. I didn't even have to go to school. I was so good in sports. You know, they didn't. I could play football. I didn't even have to go to school because I was really good. But in baseball, they wouldn't let you play unless you made the grade. So I didn't get to play baseball. It would kind of suck. That was my better sport. But I went to 11th grade until I got in a fight with a coach. And I think I shared this before. Is Coach Chapman? I don't know if you guys knew him. Coach Chapman. He was a coach at Chula Vista High School, and I was a quarterback. You know, I was really good. I could throw a football really far, and I played one play. I started smoking weed. You got to remember this part too. And I forgot to play. It was supposed to be a fullback dive, and I went the wrong way, so I ran back and I ran and I threw a touchdown, right, like 60-yard touchdown. The coach grabbed me by the face, man. I guess he thought I did it on purpose. He said, "You never listen to me." So grabbed me, get out of here. So I had to go back. I had to go on defensive line and shit, from quarterback to defensive line in a minute. And I could throw a football really far, but he had his favorite. I really believe there was favoritism back then, too, and there still is in recovery. I'm not just kidding. I'm Larry Jose's favorite. Anyways, for a minute, I thought I lost that spot. And when what's his name was around, George, man, I thought he took my spot. I felt bad. I kind of felt like I was losing him. I was going to start looking for another sponsor. Larry's been my sponsor for 20 years. What a wonderful man he's been in my life. We'll get to that again. That guy's been, he's a Hall of Fame sponsor, man. I always tell you guys, he's the best sponsor that I could ever have, you know. I heard his story, and it really resonated with me, because he's a, you don't mind if I tell you, he's a recovering NA Nazi, but he got clean and sober in AA, you know, and I did too. AA has saved my life. I got clean and sober in AA. No matter what the substance is, I got 21 years, no matter what. And Alcoholics Anonymous, by working the steps. Well, I'll get to that later, too. I never worked the steps when I first got here, and I got loaded twice. Anyways, I might get off on a tangent sometimes, but that's okay. I'm clean and sober today, and I'm breathing. I got to breathe. I wrote that down, too. Breathe, Bernie. Anyways, I played baseball. Because if I don't breathe, I'll get a little. What's that word? Passed out. Anyway, you dead? Yeah, that's it, dead. So I was good at sports. I got in trouble. I told the coach. He ran after me. He couldn't catch me all the way across the field. I was going, fuck. See? I was telling him like that. He chased me all the way across the field. I went like that, so I didn't play no more football after that. I got kicked off the team. You know, and that's just the way it is. You know, you can't do that to the coach. And anyways, so I got kicked off. That was that part. So I started messing around a little weed back then. You know, it was after Pony League. I played Pony South. We won the championship. And then I met a guy there, and he lived in Bonita. And he smoked weed. I think I was 12 years old. And we smoked a little weed. And so that's when I started. Oh, Richard. What's up, Rich? I smoked a little weed, and then my baseball career ended too there because I couldn't see the ball no more. I was always wondering, how the hell, why can't I hit this baseball anymore? But it's because I started smoking weed, and it does something to you. So I smoked weed for a couple years. I didn't really get into anything hard till later. I was drinking. My family, there's a lot of alcoholics. My dad died from it. My grandfather died from alcoholism. My grandfather was, mother, grandfather was alcoholic. All my family, they're alcoholic, and So the apple didn't fall too far from the tree. I use alcoholically, and once I start, I can't stop. And my switch is broken. It's always been broken, and I know that today. If I use anything, I will not stop until I get busted or arrested. And it's always been the same. I never stopped when I started. So it's the first one that's going to get me, always. The first one's going to kill me, not the last one. The first one's always going to get me, and I know that today, and I've read that many times, and I understand what my disease is, it rests in my mind, and I have that allergy, and I have that obsession, and I know that today. So I can't use one time, and I can't practice using. I already tried that, and it didn't work. And I can't smoke weed either. That ain't in our, if California recovery is not part of my life, or I don't smoke weed either. You know, I don't do any any of that stuff. And, you know, I'm completely clean and sober. I came from a social model detox where we get clean and sober and we don't use anything. That's how my recovery looks. My recovery is completely clean and sober, and that's how I live today. And that's the way it's different today, but I'm not trying to split hairs. I think I did my first line was I was about 19 or 18 years old, and that's when I found heaven. And I remember the day it was at Sam's Trailer Service down there in Chula Vista on Palomar and Broadway. It was with Steve Williams. His dad owned the place, and he gave me a line, and man, I was off and running. And I didn't get clean until 1991, December 31st. That's my first clean date. Well, I'll get to that later. I don't have 35 years, so you figure that out. I have 21 years. So obviously I have two relapses, and my relapse is part of my story. And I don't know if it's a relapse. I always share this with you guys because I had no recovery. I had 5.5 years of abstinence the first time. I had no recovery. I hadn't worked the steps, hadn't done a four-step, hadn't heard another man's four-step, because that's what I was told. That's when you complete the process, when you hear another man's four-step. My sponsor told me that. And the funny thing is the first one I heard was his son's. That's a trip. The first one I really heard, and that was on God's Rock at Freedom Ranch. And Lawrence is right here with going on 10 years. And I didn't have nothing to do with that. It was all the Creator. I just was a tool in that process. I have nothing to do with this. It's all my higher power and the Creator that has even brought me here. The table was set for all you guys. If you're here, the table's set. You just have to walk behind us. Follow the herd. You walk behind us and, you know, you get the same results. Do what we do, you know. I truly believe that. You know, I truly believe that I have to do recovery every single day. I have to be in gear. I always talk about this. You remember those old trucks, those old granny trannies, you know, like the old ones? They would have first, you know, rrr, rrr, rrr. As long as I'm in rrr, 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 I'm not going backwards. Because first is always, if I put it in neutral, I'm in trouble. If I put it in reverse, obviously I'm going the wrong way. Put it in first if I'm, and just kind of chug along if I have to some days. But you know, I trudge, you know, because there's some days, but I don't have a lot of bad days anymore. I'm serious, I don't. I've done the steps, I've done the work that keeps me locked into this thing, and I have a relationship with my Creator that is so strong. I go every week and I pray with these guys, and all we do is pray for you guys. We're spiritual warriors. You know, we talk about that in the lodge. We're praying for the people that haven't got here yet. We do it every week. We suffer a little bit. I have to suffer. I'm a knucklehead. And it's okay. And I go in there. You know, I think what Nick was talking about that. No, it depends on where I'm at. I don't have to suffer all the time. That's optional. If I'm locked in, if I'm truly praying for somebody besides myself, I don't suffer so much in there. If I'm praying for when my mom went through cancer, I sat in the back in the hottest spot, I always do anyways, with Eric, my other sponsee, and I was sitting back there with him. And whenever I prayed for my mom, I didn't feel nothing because I wasn't thinking about myself. Whenever I start thinking of myself, I struggle. Isn't that kind of like with recovery? If I start thinking about myself, I'm going to struggle because I'm not giving my will to the Creator. I'm taking it back. I can't take this back, you know, this is, and I do sometimes. Sometimes I wake up, I know this, I wake up sometimes and I'm full of self-will, full of pride and ego. We were talking about that tonight. I brought my car, you know, I dropped it off here in the speaker spot because I wanted to be there, because I wanted to show off a little. And my friends said, oh, well, maybe it's a little ego, Bernie, that you're parking there. And then I go, and then my sponsor said, well, it's half ego because the car's primered. It's not all clean, it's not all painted or nothing. And then someone else said that. And then Eileen said, well, he wants to be a little boy. And I did want to be a little boy and bring my car and show it off. Can I do that? But my sponsor had said, no, it's half ego. No, my sponsor, he said it was ego. And then my sponsor said it's half ego because it's primer. When it's painted, it's full ego. What kind of shit is that? I just wanted to be a little boy and bring it and show it off. Damn, I came here on a bicycle. Come on, guys. broken down bicycle. No, I didn't have a bicycle. At the end, I didn't have a bicycle. I had a bag of dirty ass clothes that, and detox that stood on themselves and they stunk. Yeah, I remember, you look inside there, they were all standing up because they had been so, I've been wearing them for weeks. And that's how I got here. And Lulu Porter's, that was December 31st, 1991. Lulu Porter's was a detox for parolees in the 90s. And I don't know if some of you guys know that. That was my first shot at it. Anyways, and I ended up getting clean and sober for the last time in 1111 Island, which was right across the street. Funny thing, right across the street, and I finally threw in the towel. When I came here to Alcoholics Anonymous, when I finally got it, just for today. Because it's a daily, it's daily. I don't have it. I don't claim to have this thing licked. I just know no matter what, today I got to stay clean and sober, and I'm surrounded by a bunch of good people in recovery, man. I got the A team, man. I got some really strong people in recovery in my life. I really do, man. I do. I have some really powerful people that are in my life, and they'll pull you up on your shit real quick. They'll let you slither for a little bit. Like Molly said, I slithered in here. Well, I've known Molly like 35 years, and she goes, "Man, you used to slither around the meetings when you were here earlier. I would be slithering around and shit. I wore this long trench coat, and I thought I was all that." And but I had no recovery. I hadn't worked the steps. Once again, I was here in the other fellowship, taking advantage of this opportunity that is priceless. You know, I didn't know that I was still acting the same person I was for many years before. And I got loaded. I got loaded that time because I had no defense. It talks about in the book. I had no defense against this thing. I cannot beat this thing with my mind or my thinking. I cannot be. I have to have a spiritual awakening. I have to have a spiritual connection. Otherwise, I'm done. I will never be able to even have a chance against my alcoholism. It has to be spiritual in nature. It has to be. And I truly believe that. I have a spiritual connection that keeps me here. And I was gonna, yeah, that's really powerful in my life. Anyways, getting back to my little cards. I started using I told you about that first one, right? That first one got me. I was about 19, and I was 31 the first shot, the time I got a chance to experience this thing called recovery. Well, I don't know if it's recovery. I just went to detox, and I stopped using for a while, and I got a job in treatment. I was Mr. N.A., a drug counselor in East County. I looked really good, had a nice truck, got off parole. I was a dressed-up trash can, and I had no recovery whatsoever. I look good, though, boy, but I look good like a mama. But I slithered like, well, I slithered around those meetings. I had no recovery whatsoever. I was a snake. And anyways, that's for sure. Because I started selling weed at 4.5 years clean, or well, I don't know what you call it, slithering. 4.5 years slithering. I started selling pounds of weed. I'll get to that later. So anyways, I get out of control. I start doing these. Last time I shared about terrible criminals, or you ever seen that one? Bad criminals on TV. I was bad criminal. I was the baddest criminal of all criminals. One time I stole a car. I stole the car at the old White Runner Fedco over there on Palomar and Broadway. There was a baby in it, right? I was ready. The lady left the car running, and I went and I got in the car and ready to take off. I don't even know why. I didn't even need a car. I just was going to take off in it, right? I take the car. I get inside the car. There's my baby. The lady goes, "My baby, my baby." So I didn't steal it. I took off because there's a baby. You know, I'm not going to take a baby with me. And I ran across the street and hid in the bushes, and I went back to say I'm sorry I took the baby, and they arrested me. I went back to tell the lady, "I'm sorry I took your baby," and they arrested me. That was one of my first worst criminals. And then my first one was a friend of mine. We got drunk, and he broke into a warehouse Main Street Main Street and Broadway. He broke into it. So he was drunk, and I wanted to go in there and see what happened to him. And I went inside there, and they caught me inside there, too. I went in to get him, and I got busted. That was my first felony. I was 18 years old. Dumbass criminal. I wasn't a criminal. I just used to steal shit because it was fun, you know, and I would steal cars and steal. I stole a lot of shit, and I didn't even need it. I used to steal a lot of stuff, yeah. And anyways, I ended up going to prison, right? Doesn't make me tougher or meaner than you. I just went to prison, and I seen some shit there, and I got out, and I got introduced to Narcotics Anonymous, the other fellowship, which is a good fellowship. I just wasn't ready, or I just didn't have the right teachers. I don't know what it was, but all I know is I had the right teachers when I came here. I'm not trying to split hairs. The other fellowship works really well. I got some women that are in my life, my companion and another friend of mine. They can go tit for tat with anyone in recovery, and they're in the other fellowship. I wouldn't even step their way when it comes to recovery, and they're both in the other fellowship, and they love the other fellowship. They got really good recovery. They got over 3 decades, closer towards 4 decades. That's the kind of people I hang around with, and I won't mess with them, either one of them. They got good recovery, and so my companion has almost 4 decades, you know, and so she probably needs that just to be with me. I don't slither no more, guys, but she probably needs that just to deal with me. Anyway, she's got good recovery, and so Molly, Molly's one of my good friends. I went to go pick her up. She doesn't like to drive out here, but I always include her in everything. We had a men's book study for many years. This is really important. But Larry Jose, we had a men's book study. We studied Sermon on the Mount. We studied the Big Book, and we studied it. You know, we really got into it. We had really good book studies, and it was all men. And Molly said, I want in your group. I said, no men, no, just all men. She goes, no, I want in. Okay, I'm gonna put it out there. We had one guy. I'm sorry, I spit. Did I spit on you? Something came out of my mouth. Anyways, I'm sorry. I get excited by recovery. Anyways, so we voted on it a couple times, and finally she got in, and now we have a book study. It's for men and women, and it's a big book study, and we also study Sermon on the Mount. I think we studied the NA Basic Tech one time. Sermon on the Mount has probably been the most influential book in my life that I've ever read. That book is so powerful. I don't know if it was required reading before the Big Book, and I think me and my sponsor were talking about it. It was either after the Oxford group or around there or the same time. Whenever you got out of your bed, your hospital bed, and you were shaking, they gave you the Sermon on the Mount book, and it was required reading for the first 100. And that book breaks down the Beatitudes of the Lord's Prayer, and it also teaches you how to pray, and it teaches you how to get out of your head. It talks about all action is born in thought. This is really critical stuff for you new guys. If you start thinking about something long enough, you will do it. So I have to get that thinking out of my head really quick. So when I start thinking about using or drinking, I have to go somewhere which away from that, you know. So I usually go to the sweat lodge in my head, or I don't think about using anymore. I don't. I've had dreams and stuff like that, but it's not part of my life, you know, because I'm in recovery today. And if I'm in recovery, it doesn't have that much space to get in there, because my disease, all it needs is a little space to get in there. So I try to keep that out, you know, by thinking of my creator and thinking about you guys and helping others. If I'm doing that, and if I'm helping a newcomer, the disease has no time or chance to get into my life, you know, and I see it, you know, my son is one of us, and I see the disease, and it's really tough sometimes when I've helped a lot of men, but I can't help my son. I've shared this. My son is one of us, and he blacks out sometimes, and he smokes weed at the house, and I'm an enabler. I truly am an enabler. It's hard when your son's doing it, you know, right in front of you. And the thing is, my mom raised him, so I really can't kick him out. And anyways, he's too big to kick out. He's like, and my mom wouldn't go for it anyways. That's her baby. She raised him. His mother died when he was 7 weeks old. And I went back home, and she helped me raise him. And so I kind of put, you know, I hope he gets it, you know, and I think he will, from what I understand, if I keep on doing what I'm doing, and I just got to get out of the way, you know. Sometimes you can't help your own son, you know. I experienced that with my sponsor. My sponsor don't cry too much. He's tough. He's a Vietnam veteran, tough dude, you know, he never cries. But when Lawrence got loaded, boy, he was crying like a bitch. I'll take Lawrence on. I told him that too. I said, he straightened me out. Come on, bring it, Lawrence, bring it. I'll take Lawrence on. Because I always wanted a challenge like that, you know. I'm old now, but I'm not too bad for 65. Not too bad. But anyways, I work on myself. I really work on myself. I exercise and I take care of myself. And this says, Miscellaneous gives this to me. I love Stu and Miscellaneous. They're a big part of my life. No matter what club, I'm in the club. It's kind of crooked, you know, but it says sober in the back, right? But I changed it to sugar. No sugar today, just for today, because sugar's a killer. Anyways, I got sidetracked there a little bit. Okay, so I was a drug counselor in the 90s when I first got clean at McAllister. I opened up New Connections. I worked at Detox with Dennis Tucker. He was a really wonderful man. And he died from overdose. He just couldn't, and he had good recovery, man. It just goes to show that disease has one job, to get you alone and kill you. And my sponsor told me that. And he was alone in his bathroom at his mother's house when he died. He overdosed, and his brother died in that same bathroom. And his other brother died in that bathroom. Three brothers died in that bathroom from overdoses. That's how powerful this disease is, you know. It's no joke. It wants to get you alone, away from us, in your head, and kill your ass. That's one job it has. Get you alone and kill you, you know. So we have to battle this thing, and we have tools to battle this disease, you know. It's like my sponsor said something the other day. It was so powerful. I always listen to him. I'm not always. I was kind of nodding off. He says, "We're the keepers of the solution." Just hit me right between the head. He goes, "We're the keepers of the solution." So all my guys, I have to give them the solution, so they can give their guys a solution. He said, "We're teachers of teachers." It made so much sense to me now. I mean, at that time, you know, we're trying to teach our guys so they can teach other guys. And the best thing you could do for a man is take him to God, is sit him down or take him in the lodge and get him to have a relationship with Creator. That's what really going to keep you here. Is there's no other thing that can keep me here is my relationship with God or the Creator. And I don't know what he looks like for you. He could look like however he looks for you. I don't know what mine looks like, but I know when I'm praying for him and I'm suffering in that lodge, I know there's something more powerful than me that's going to keep me clean and sober. It's not me. It's not me, you know, and it's something. I don't know what he looks like. It might be a woman. Because I praised women for a long time, you know what I mean? Got in trouble too. Kind of went out behind women too. That's another story. I went out because I got my feelings hurt and I had no recovery. But both the times it was heartbreak. Both times it was heartbreak. I got my feelings hurt. So I chose to get loaded instead of walking through it, you know. And then this time it happened again. This time, but I met Larry Jose, and I was going to get loaded again. I know this is a true story. I went to the river bottom. I met her down there, and my buddy was with her. I share the story. I was there with them, the three of them. And I asked him, "Give me some of that. Give me some. Come on, Ed. Give me some shit." You know what he told me? He goes, "I don't have any. He just cleaned my yard the other day, but I've known this for years. He didn't want to share with me." Was that God working in my life, or was that Ed being stingy? I've been clean ever since. Larry sat with me. He goes, "Bring that step over. Bring that list over. Bring that list over, Bernie." And I told him, "Man, that fucking bitch, man, I know she's fucking around with Sancho." And this is the truth. And Sancho was a connect. I go, "Larry, I know where Sancho lives." He goes, no. Come over. Let's do this list. And if you do this four-step with me, and if you still feel the same way when we're done, I'll go beat Sancho's ass with you." He told me. He told me that. I go, "Okay." I had a spiritual awakening. I became accountable for my actions when I did that step with him, and I've been here ever since. I did the steps. I this is a step program, right? I did the steps. I had a spiritual awakening. I had a psychic change when I sat with Larry. Larry sat in front of his house on West. No. No, right here in Chula Vista, West Vista Way, yeah. In my 87 Volvo wagon. And I did that list with him, and at the top, she was at the top, and there were some other ones, and my mom, and I did that, did it with him, did the columns with him, and then he started that book study. I got in the book study. I got Larry through proxy. I told him I was going to be a sponsee. I never asked him. No, I didn't think I told him. I think Dana said, Dana did. Dana's a big part of my recovery over there, Dana. He was going through some shit when I came back, and he said, I bet you, I don't know, I think it's $1 million, that if you don't work with this guy in 1 year, you're not going to make it. He told me that. So he was, I just made the number up. But anyways, he told me in his kitchen that if you don't work with this guy, you're not going to make it. And I go, what's this little Filipino pimp going to teach me about recovery? Because he had a fedora, and he had a London Fog trench. He had a fedora. He was cool. Larry is one of the coolest guys. You guys know Larry Jose. He's one of the coolest guys around, right? He's the coolest sponsor around. Not only is he a Hall of Famer, he's also the coolest Hall of Famer. I said, what's this little Filipino pimp? He could dance, too. He taught me everything. He's still teaching me. I've been in his back pocket for 20 years. What a blessing to have a spiritual giant like that. You know, my other spiritual giant didn't show up today, and it kind of pisses me off, my spiritual leader, but because I want to throw some kudos at him. He says he's not a medicine man, but he sure helps a lot of men. And I think medicine men are people that help men and help them find their creator. Because that's what it's really about, having a relationship, once again, with your creator. When all else fails, my God will keep me clean and sober no matter what. He has. And he'll keep me out of, and he'll get me out of danger, you know, out of places where I'm not supposed to be. He guides me if I let him. Man, I get excited about this shit. And I thought I was going to fucking come up short. I never could. Anyways, so I was a counselor. See, I came right back to it. I still got a little few marbles. I was a counselor at McAllister Detox, and I was a counselor at New Connections. I opened up the parolee program. Actually, I was a parolee in New Connections. It was called a P3. It was in the 90s. I was one of the first guys to go through that program, and then I became Jeannie McAllister's peacock. I was one of her peacocks, and she had the hots for me, but I always think she was a little too old for me. She really did. This is God's truth. And I don't know. she told me one time, she goes, Bernie, if I was 20 years younger. And I go, God damn, Jeannie, you got enough money to be 20 years younger than you're 20. Let me check that wallet out. No, I'm just kidding. But anyway, I had a story with her too. Anyways, I worked at those two places, and then I got caught up in this is how my disease works. I was fraternizing with a girl. You know what fraternization is? I don't know if you guys know what that is. In plain English, I was messing with a girl that was in one of their programs. It was like one of her sister programs. And she goes, Bernie, that's one of our sister's programs. We bought it out or whatever. And she said, but I'm going to let you slide, Bernie. But you know what my mouth said? It's none of your fucking business anyways, Jeannie McAllister. And she fired me on the spot. I opened my mouth. So I end up taking over. I end up being a caretaker for Kiva House in Santee, way out there in Santee. This is another one of my, I have so many of them. This is like 18 bedroom house, big house in Kiva. They had a swimming pool and shit like that. I started my own sober living without her permission. I had like 8 guys living out there. I was cashing that money in, ching, ching, ching. She goes, where's all these guys from, Bernie? Oh my God, I had to make amends to her for that too. And she's, what's it called? Embezzlement? No. Something. She called it something. She called it something. She goes, Bernie, get out. You got to get out of here. So I went out. That was before. I was still clean. I was still clean, slithering around. I was still slithering around, and I had other ideas. Anyways, so I lost that job there, and then I got married. After that, I got married, and I had my daughter, and that was in 1996, and she left me. She escaped. And no, she didn't leave. See, water seeks its own level. You know, it really does seek its own level. If you had, I wasn't very, very nice, and I was selfish and considerate. I was, I was really a kind of psycho too. I was a little bit crazy back then. And my ex-wife had, she had some emotional stuff, but she was beautiful, but she was crazy as a blue jay too. And she was a beautiful woman, but she's crazy. And I came home, she was pregnant. I came home one day and all the shit was gone. Everything was gone except the washer and dryer, which I bought. And I go, where the hell did she go? She had an episode, you know, she had postpartum depression. She left me. And that's when that's when my first recovery, and I started selling weed at Fort. She left and went into hiding. I couldn't find her, and I started selling weed at 4.5 years clean, or 4.5 years without. I was abstinent. I was a dry drunk, and it took a year to the day. I always share this. Then I'll get on with my recovery. But anyways, I started selling weed. That's when it was illegal, and. It was a whole year. This is how my disease had me. It had me acting like a criminal, acting like, well, I don't call a weed seller a criminal, but a supplier. And but I was still clean. I went to this guy's house at 5.5 years clean, or whatever you call it. I don't know if it was clean or just abstinent. And he goes, I don't have no money right now, Bernie, but I do have some speed. You know what my disease told me? I could be a speed dealer too. My drug of choice. I stuck that big old rock in my pocket. I was loaded that night. That's how it happened. I stole weed for a whole year. I stuck it in my pocket. I was feeling it and shit like that. I was walking around. I was still clean, feeling that shit in my pocket, you know. That disease, it's no joke. It has you. And then I had a date that night. You know, I could tell you guys, I had a date that night. And I remember how it was when I used to do that shit. How sick and deviant I was. And So I thought I could put some in my coffee. So I pulled a little rock out and put it in my coffee, and off I go. There I go, off and running. I took a couple more years before I came back, and I did geographical with my son's mother, and I met her at the Connect, and she was in the fellowship. She was in the other fellowship, and I seen her. I go, what are you doing here? Same shit you're doing here. Julie Thrash. A lot of you guys knew her. She was in the in NA in the 90s, and she was a wonderful girl, and she is my son's mother, and we went to Mississippi. I went to Mississippi. I did that geographical. I went to Mississippi, and I went to meetings there. I got a couple years clean, and I was going to meetings in Biloxi. Where was Elvis born? In Tupelo, Mississippi. He was born in Tupelo, Mississippi, and I was fishing. I was hunting. I was really, 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 it was really exciting, man. It was the exciting part. You know, I thought I was going to live there. I thought I was going to stay there, you know, because the thing about living in Mississippi, I want to tell you guys, there's some KKK shit down in Mississippi. There's some KKK shit. But I don't look Mexican. They thought I was white. I didn't tell them either. Because the Mexicans there are little Oaxacans. They're little guys, and they work the sweet potato fields, right? This guy used to fish. He goes, God damn, what are you anyways? What do you mean? What I spoke Spanish in front. You speak Spanish? I look so white, I got into the country club as a handyman. That's how white I look. You know, I was in there with all those rednecks. Let me recheck that. I don't need to say that because I don't need to judge anybody. No, because I heard a guy say something one time at the podium. I'm sorry. All those white guys. Anyways, I'm not judging. I'm not throwing no sticks or stones either. But hey, we're in Southern California. No, anyways, I got in the country club. I got my little job and everything. And my son's mother wanted to have the baby in California. She came back here and she died 7 weeks later. My son was born and she came here and I don't know if she got loaded again because she was one of us and she loved to get loaded. And I don't know if she got loaded and had a heart attack and she died. And I was already setting up, and I had my little house out in the country, and I was going to fish and hunt and do my little painting jobs and my little side jobs. And my brother calls me, you're going to come back here, you're going to get that baby, and you're going to take care of that little kid. I go, what are you talking about? Her mother drove out there, got me and drove all my shit, came back and brought me back here to San Diego, and I picked up my little kid. He was at my son, he's not little no more, but I picked him up, and I've been a father to him ever since. I was clean and sober when I got him, but I ended up relapsing because I had no program. And And so a couple years later, I found AA, and I got clean. And he's not the reason why I got clean. He's and sober. He's a big part of it. The reason why I got clean and sober is because I have a relationship with God and Creator. And none of that shit would matter. My son, my mother, you guys, no one matters when I'm using and drinking. I have to have that relationship in order to stay here. I really have to have the relationship in order to stay here. It's not about the substance or that I use. It's about the way I treat people, the way I treat myself. And it's really a spiritual malady because I start acting like a bad person, you know, and spiritual in nature, you know. You could call it demonic. You can call it the other side. But it really is there. And we all have it. If you have what I have, you know, this disease, it's spiritual in nature. And there's only one solution, and that's a relationship with my Creator. Once again, I have to pray for you guys in order to get the results. I have to pray and help other men. My sponsees, you know, I have to work. I like to have them with me. I take them to lodge, and I try to carry them with me whenever I go to meetings. One of mine had those guys back there. I don't know if he's here. He's living in the house. He's around here somewhere. And I took him to the meeting the other day, and he's working in treatment. But treatment is not recovery. I obviously, you know that because I worked in treatment, and I didn't stay clean and sober. Recovery is in Alcoholics Anonymous, and it's the action. It's the action that we take. We have to be in action to stay here. The only way I'm going to stay here is if I do the stuff that you guys suggest I do. Otherwise, I'm gonna go backwards. I can't do that today, you know. I still have it in me, but I'm not going to. I choose not to do that today. I was real nervous when I got up here earlier, because this is so powerful in my life. The people that have affected me that are here today. There's some really powerful people that have been in my life that helped me. You know, it's like. I was beyond help. I was telling Johnny, he's back there. I grew up with Johnny too. We shouldn't be here. We should be loaded. We're the guys that got plucked out, the worst of the worst. At least I was. I couldn't stop. I could not stop no matter what. I tried over and over again, and I got a couple hours once in a while. I got up thinking about it. That's how I use. I don't stop until I get caught or get stopped. Once I start, it's over. My switch is broken. And I know that. My switch is broken. So I'm doing sugar like that right now, one day at a time, you know. Because I want to carrot cake so bad right now. I'm not going to do it. My sponsor's wife told me, do sugar one day at a time, Bernie. I actually have done pretty good lately. And I thought I was going to, and I, you know why I worked out this week and took care of myself all week? Because I thought I was going to come up here and I had to look good. Yeah. It's crazy, huh? 10 minutes? What? 5 minutes? Oh, who said that? I could be here, huh? Okay. You said 9 o'clock? 5, 10 minutes? Okay. Anyways, enough of that. So I got here in 04. I went to 11-11 Island, and I got caught in a raid. You know, I didn't stop on my own. I got caught. The cops helped me stop, and they put a gun to the back. They put a gun to the back of my head and told me stop. Okay. I was laid out, of course. It was in a raid in Chula Vista, my cousin's house. I would close with this funny story, but I went there to go use his shit. I had some in my pocket. I was the only one that had any. I was the only one who got busted because it went in my pocket. It was in my cigarette pack. My cousin goes, go ahead, arrest whoever has it. And I'm laying next to him. We're both fall next to each other. I look over, it was me, and he started laughing. You motherfucker, you came over here to use my shit. Anyways, that's how I use. I like to use your shit, not mine. Anyways, I'm selfish and inconsiderate. So I get drug court. I go to court, and the judge didn't want to give me drug court because he's seen my file. You know, I was an ex-convict, and... I'm not a hard guy, but I had a file, C file, a long one, and they said, we're not going to give this guy drug court, the DA. She goes, no, no, no. But the judge, I raised my hand. I go, hey, Judge, I was in treatment. I was in recovery. You know, I came up with something. I had 5 years clean and sober. Can you give me another chance? And he did. He goes, let's give this guy drug court. Bam! And the DA, and the they couldn't do nothing because the judge makes a decision. And I got drug court. I went to drug court. I was in a 13 or 14 month program. I used until I got caught. Until I didn't get clean right away. I knew the counselor. We were friends. And he goes, I got to test you, Bernie. I go, why? I'm not doing anything wrong. I came up dirty for meth and for alcohol. And he goes, I got to send you to detox. And I go, why? And I procrastinated for another 3 weeks, 4 weeks, got loaded. And then I went to detox, and that's where and the only thing I knew about recovery was the serenity prayer. That's all I knew. That's how vast my recovery was. I knew all the jargon. I knew all the words, but I didn't know nothing about this place or nothing about that stuff right there, the steps on the wall. I got here and I got introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous. I just through the creator. There's no other way I could describe it. And I met Larry Jose, my sponsor, and I worked the steps with him. Like I said, he sat with me. And I got in the book study with him for 10 years. 10 years of reading the book over and over again. God, again? I don't know. I heard it so many times, it stuck. Maybe that's, I heard all the good stuff. You know, if you hear it enough times, you'll hear some really good stuff if you pay attention. You know, I wanted to be like Larry Jose, you know, but I don't sponsor 1,000 guys, and, you know, and I'm not like that, but I sponsor a few. There was this one guy, he used to carry a briefcase. Larry used to carry a briefcase. This is another story for when he was NA Nazi. He used to carry a briefcase. And this guy used to carry a briefcase, and I go, he's going to take over Larry Jose's spot, and I'm going to be left behind, right? Because I always thought, I'm going to be second fiddler, you know? Rick Ortiz. And I thought, oh, he's going to take my spot. He didn't take my spot. I'm still here. But I thought he was going to, so I fucking tried harder. Tried harder. I always been in his back pocket for many times. And anyways, what I did is I read the book over and over again. I did the steps. I completed them. I heard another man's four step. Recovery is the number one thing in my life. It has to be the most important thing. This has to be the most important thing in my life. It's first and foremost my relationship with my creator and going to meetings on a regular basis, cleaning house, work with newcomers, carry the message, help other people whenever you can. Don't be so selfish and inconsiderate. Opposite of what I used to be all my life. I try to be opposite of that most of the time. I do have. I have a lot of good friends in recovery too. My fellowship is, my tribe is deep. My tribe is deep. I have the best people in recovery, man. They're all strong and they really are, you know. I took my sponsors. I went cruising the other day in my 53, and the guy likes hot rods. He's a new guy. He's here in Pioneers. So I had to go by Stu's house in Elaine. Oh my God, look at all these old cars. He was all excited. Oh, I love cars. And he was all excited. And he got to see him. And Stu's playing guitar for him. And Elaine's telling him some really good recovery stuff. She breaks out a book and starts telling him, who's the most important person in your on your men's list? Who'd you leave out? She said, who'd you leave out in your men's list? I don't know. I don't know. Myself, yeah, that's who you left out. And that's the stuff they need to hear, the new guys. They need to hear the stuff that they can relate to. Anyways, I got a couple more minutes. 9 o'clock, you said? Okay. Went by fast. I really love this program. Pioneers is really a big part of my life. I come here like 2 or 3 times a week. I come here to carry the message, and I come here to look for newcomers. I got some sponsees from here that are doing okay. I got some that are doing really good. Some that are, what's the word I'm trying to, they know who they are. They really have, they've fought some battles that we fought together, and they stuck it out. They didn't go running to the easy way out. He knows who he is. He could have ran and got his money and got all his drugs and all this shit went back to Oklahoma, but he decided to stay. And I said, just stay. Stick it out, man. You'll find a better way here. You will find a better way to live, you know. You don't have to live that way no more. You know, he's had a spiritual awakening. He's our fire keeper at times, and he's really doing really well. I really, all my guys, most of my guys are doing really well. I have a couple guys in Tijuana. I have guys that did a lot of years in prison, and they sit next to me in the lodge, and I'm really honored to have them in my life too. My sponsees are really, they keep me going. I'm excited to see them. You know, my sponsor, I love him. He's a Hall of Famer. I always tell you guys, if you really want recovery, go past me and go to Larry Jose. I'm not the guy. I'm okay, but go to Larry Jose because he is the guy. He is the man. You know, but you got to do the work. It still comes down to you doing the work. It doesn't matter. You have to do the work to stay here. This work. This is a program for people who want it. That want not need it. They want it. They want this program. It's a really wonderful program. I'm running out of shit to say. Let me see. Oh, heartbreak. I already told you about heartbreak. Growing up. Oh yeah, drinking. Okay. Thank you.
Bernie, thank you for that very entertaining version of your story. One more time for Bernie. Also, thank you, Liz, for sharing your birthday with us. Happy birthday. Thank you to the women of the auxiliary and the men of the house for a great dinner. Let's circle up.